This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Arrowhead Addict podcast. I'm here, you're not expecting probably me, probably not Josh Briscoe either. Just to give a total disclaimer, we're recording this on a Tuesday for a Thursday. So we'll let you figure that out with time and inception and whatever that takes. But I'm also normally here with Sterling Holmes, but that's on Tuesdays. On Thursdays is Patrick Allen and Matt Verderam. Josh Briscoe can talk a lot about a lot of things, not normally as aggressively as Matt Verderam does, and also not as really as un... Josh, how are you? I was trying to think of a way to throw Sterling under the bus there too, but it really doesn't matter.
What I'm hearing from you is that I'm kind of Matt plus Sterling plus Patrick all combined, and maybe honestly multiplied by a couple times. But like, I feel like you've brought me in to cover a lot of bases, and I'm gonna do it.
I think you're like the exponential version of everything everyone wants, and they just don't even know it.
Yeah, so, I wish I could get you to talk to my fiance for like 10 minutes and just get that in there.
Wait,
for her.
Am I the hurdle to get her from going, like, has she already said yes, or do you need help with that?
She said yes, but you know, it was just kind of one of those like, yeah, like it was, you know, how the length of the sigh before an answer really gives it away. And that for me is what I kind of keep going back and replaying in my head.
The exasperation of the moment is what you remember. I like it. Yeah, I like it. Well, hey, folks, we're one. If you're listening, if you're watching, we're so glad to have you. As always, it's always a pleasure and thankful for anyone who consumes really anything in these crowded digital days. But we're thrilled to have Josh on the program today in the wake of the NFL draft and a week of like wizardry for Brett Veach and that front office. I asked Josh to come on. If somehow you don't know Josh, he's the host of Almost Entirely Sports on 810. You're also with Seth on Time's Up, right? Nate Taylor's on that too with the
Time
Athletic.
Is ours. The time, time's the time ours. Is ours now. Yeah,
time's ours, not Time's Up. I don't know.
If you just throw a football somewhere in the greater Kansas City metro area, you are liable to hit a piece of content that I have made.
That's totally true. You're also the editor of Arrowhead Report on the Sports Illustrated Network, right?
Yes, the Fan Nation Network on Sports Illustrated. Yeah, we've got. I mean, really, just a lot of irons in the fire. But I will tell you this.
Verbal?
Every angle. But it did start, legitimately, it started on Arrowhead Addict for me like 8 years ago now, maybe longer than that. Back when there were like three Chiefs podcasts, so my terrible one was one of very few options that people had. So I feel like I'm back in some old stomping grounds right now.
The nascent days of things, you were here. Well, we're so glad to have you back. Josh, wanting to talk about the draft, it's been a few days now. Like, how were you feeling during the draft, and did that change now, like after the fact? Like how are you, like, were you nervous, worried? Were you liking it, not liking it? Do you like it more now, less now? Like how is all that coming together for you now?
I was very worried. I mean, you know, on the level that it's not a loved one in critical condition or something. But I was football worried on Thursday because I didn't think it made any sense. But the one report that sticks out is Jay Glazer tweeting out that the Chiefs are looking to move up and even considering using next year's first, which is funny because here on Tuesday, a couple days in the past, Brett Veach joked that Clark Hunt told him on multiple occasions he's not allowed to trade the first round pick for next year because it's going to be here in Kansas City. And that was even something like we talked about a day of, but I was kind of sitting there thinking, man, you know, I love Jameson Williams. You know, there are some incredible players here. And maybe if Kayvon Thibodeau were to fall or what, you know, there were all of these different realities that I was thinking about. But ultimately, I just was most hopeful that the Chiefs would actually make two picks on Thursday. And as long as they were making two picks on Thursday, it didn't really matter all that much to me what else they had to do to move around. Ideally, you also don't give up, you know, that second round pick or either of those second round picks. They got through. They made four picks in the first two rounds. So I was happy about that. I've got my big pick. Your sort of thesis on what this whole class looks like altogether that we can get to if you want. I've got all this to unpack. But big picture generally, like, yeah, I feel as good about this draft now as I did on Thursday and Friday and Saturday. I think each day has something interesting to it. The only thing that makes me uncomfortable right now is the fact that literally everyone thinks the Chiefs had a good draft. And that's, I don't know how often that happens. Like, universal praise right now throughout NFL media is for the Chiefs and the Jets. And if that makes you comfortable, then you've got more emotional sort of intelligence at this point than I do.
Well, I want to unpack everything that you're talking about. I just want to say, first of all, that I agree. I think it was a magnificent weekend. And I think you were right. I just thought, I want them to hold on to all these early picks. And I don't even care where they go, because there's so many places that need it, that when they apply that pick, it's just going to, it's going to be good. Yeah. So I think I agree with you there. But also, before we move on, I just want to give a shout out to our sponsor. You already mentioned I'm in the KC Beer beanie.
It's a great beanie.
A beanie, what a meanie. And the Arrowhead Addict Podcast brought to you by KC Beer Co. It's the largest locally owned brewery in Kansas City. They're also the only brewery in Kansas City to focus on German beer styles. Do you know, Josh, do you know the German purity law of 1516?
Why would I know that?
I'm just asking. You're a bastion of knowledge. You are a tower of wisdom.
You have found something that I have a blind spot on. I could talk about almost anything, but that misses me. I'd love to learn.
They use only four ingredients: malt, hops, water, and yeast. I think that's also how I make my macaroni. Anyway, it's delicious. This award-winning brewery, a terrific lineup of brews. So whatever kind of beer you're into, they got a style for you. Look for the KC Beer Co. Red Carton in your local store. And give them a shout out on Twitter. Say you heard them here. It's good for us, good for them. They're just good people, honestly, who make good beer. We could read all the things about them, but I think the best thing to say is just good people making good beer locally. How do you beat that? Anyway, dear to beer different, Josh Briscoe. Tell me your master thesis of the Kansas City Chiefs 2022. By the way, 10 pick draft class.
10 picks. Oh, that was another one of the things that I started getting really aggravated about over the course of the pre-draft process. Like, oh, they don't have all these roster spots. Yeah, they do. Those seventh round picks and undrafted free agents. If you bundle all those together, of course, they were going to have a bunch of guys there. But certainly they could have taken seven or eight guys in those first few rounds. And they did. Yeah. And I love that. But yeah, I think there are two things that for me, like, just smack me in the face over the course of the draft unfolding. The first one really definitely landed on Thursday for me. It was actually Friday night. Like Friday morning. It was Thursday night into Friday morning. And so I've had to say that, you know, if this doesn't sound profound, understand that at 2 a.m. Friday morning when I wrote it down, it felt profound to me.
Woke up and like wrote something down?
No, I just didn't sleep for roughly 3 days. I was just, there was a lot of energy drink sort of fueling through my bones. But what made sense to me with Trent McDuffie and George Karlaftis especially is looking at the Chiefs' first two picks of the last several years' draft classes, of all the Veach draft classes. I think this is the first time that I have fully 100% understood the logic of the picks. Maybe the second time under Veach. Which the reason that I go to the logic of it and to the process of it is because, like, I love a little draft grade. You know, it's fun. I did mine. You guys did yours. It's fun to do, but at its core, it's stupid, right? Because like what we can grade isn't what that career is going to look like, because it hasn't happened yet. What we can grade is the process. And then we just, you know, filter it through our priors, what we liked about these players or this fit or whatever. And then we say what we think is going to happen. So it's still projecting, even though it sort of comes off as a conclusion of a grade. You know, it's still a projection. But what you can actually grade is the process of it. And so if you go back to 2018, the process led you to the last, like, quote unquote, top edge on their board, which was Breland Speaks, who is not a top edge on anyone else's board. And then Derek Nnadi, who's an excellent football player, but a two down interior defensive lineman. I don't know if I love the value of that. In 2019, you get Mecole Hardman, Juan Thornhill. Understand that. Don't know what's going on with Tyreek Hill exactly. You get a super speedy receiver with a lot of tools and then a rangy free safety to put next to Tyrann Mathieu. Totally understood the logic of those picks. Obviously in 2020, running back in the first round was not for me. I didn't see it. And then the second pick, a really athletic linebacker with a high ceiling in Willie Gay Jr. Understood the logic. And then last year, I didn't see the logic in the Nick Bolton pick. I make that point to say, I see it now. I didn't at the time. I just don't want to power wash my own resume on this. Sure. And then I saw it with Creed Humphrey, because you're giving Patrick Mahomes his center for the next 10 years, ideally. But I understand the logic here perfectly, because this team had one need that could be picked on by any above average quarterback, and then another need that would make every quarterback look like an above average quarterback. Because if it, look, man, no offense to DeAndre Baker, but the Chiefs told us what they thought about DeAndre Baker this week. They drafted five defensive backs and then traded for Lonnie Johnson. Like, they were not happy with their own secondary, obviously. So you say, well, you know, you got a guy that you can put out there and start, and he can just stick to anybody. Could he get played over by Ja'Marr Chase? Yeah, I mean, so could almost literally anyone. But Trent McDuffie is going to be where he needs to be. He has the tools to be there. We can get into the minutia on him if you want later. But you have the logic of that. And with George Karlaftis, not the highest ceiling of even the guys who are available then. Arnold Ebiketie and David Ajabo might have higher ceilings. But George Karlaftis is pretty much ready to play right now. Like, he I would love to bet this. If someone wants to find me odds that I can put money on this, I would love to bet that he leads maybe the entire defensive line in snaps taken this year as a rookie, because he's ready to go. And I think Frank Clark will miss some games. Mike Dana is a rotational piece. The interior is going to rotate through. It'll be him or Chris Jones. Like, that to me is relatively obvious. Like, he's ready to play football at a decent level right now. You know, on a roller coaster, you got to be this tall to ride. He's taller than that. And the Chiefs desperately needed somebody like that at both of those positions, at corner and at edge. So at the very least, that's my day one take for you.
Yeah. Well, I love both of those. And I think everyone was like shocked at, you know, it felt like Veach got the value that he wanted. But at the same time, there was like, but it fits like right perfectly with the need.
Yes.
And, you know, he even said that today, you know, like it doesn't always work out this way. Or he said that after the first round, you know, he's like, hey, you know, it doesn't work out this way. Normally it doesn't. In fact, normally it doesn't.
Yeah.
But here it just happens to like the planets aligned over this draft, partly because Veach traded a planet, like traded into the planetary alignment to get McDuffie.
Right.
But, you know, I think, I mean, he's biased, you know, but I had a conversation with Will Harris, who was the defensive backs coach at Washington the last few years, the day after the first round. And I just like, you know, I said, you know, I know everybody thinks their picks are going to go high. And he just laid out, he's like, hey, look, here we've had Buda Baker. We've had, you know, he just starts going through like the seven guys who he's like thrown into the pros who've all been drafted in the first few rounds. He's like, look, I know what an NFL level cornerback looks like at the college level.
Yeah.
And he said, and I was telling every general manager or coach who would call me, look, not only do I know that we produce good defensive backs at the next level, but McDuffie compared to those guys is better than those guys. So like, you should get this guy. And so that combined with even Veach's actions of like, hey, here was a kind of a top 10, maybe top 15 talent slipping into the bottom half. We had to go up. I mean, you go up and get a guy, and it just happens to fit the value. So I love it. I agree with you. I just think that's so good. And like the getting the logic there, I mean, it feels almost like the anti-Clyde draft. And I love it because they've traded these picks away. So I was dying. I'm like, please keep both, because you got to make up for ones that you didn't make.
Yes, people. That's something that I don't think people understand quite well enough in the general terms of like, hey, this is why when you trade for Frank Clark, he's got to be really good for a long time. When you trade for Orlando Brown Jr., he's got to be really good for a long time, because you're basically paying twice for those guys, you know, because you're paying in salary and you're paying in draft capital. And while, look, I mean, obviously the player that Orlando Brown Jr. was going to be the safer move than just like drafting a corner at the end of the first round last year, right? But you have to also be willing to say, well, that we're also about to see a huge chunk of salary cap space be allocated to him. And then it's more difficult for you to cover up your own mistakes if you do make them. So whenever we were having all those conversations this offseason, you know, about what's going to be the thing that Brett Veach overhauls this year, because he always overhauls something, I think that what he really overhauled here was the core, like, or was the future. Somebody used, I wish I could remember who it was. It might've been Ryan Tracy, who used the word foundation. Like there had to be a foundational influx, not just of players and talent, but of guys who are going to be here for 3 or 4 or 5 years at a very controllable value, where all of a sudden that Patrick Mahomes contract doesn't stress you out. Paying Chris Jones, Orlando Brown Jr. or Joe Tooney, you know, like those contracts hurt a little less because you're not paying for anyone else on that offensive line. Right. So I think you're 100% right that this was a chance for the Chiefs to do something. Both, this will get to my second big takeaway, but it is to do something that helps in the immediate, but that sets your floor again, ideally for the next 4 or 5 years. The more picks you can make, the more guys you're going to have, but also the better chance you're going to have of some of them being more valuable than their draft slot indicated.
Yeah. Well, let's get to that. Does that lead us into, was that your second takeaway? Is that foundational quality?
Yeah. So the foundational thing is I think maybe my tertiary take. I got a lot of layers this one, man. I spent a lot of time on the radio on Friday and Saturday. So I had a lot of time to think out loud, which is where I do most of my best thinking. My second big take, honestly, Brett Veach kind of undercut me on this one on, I think, Friday night or on Saturday, because he talked about the same thing. He stole my thunder. I was like, this doesn't sound that smart anymore, because
Veach
said it. Yeah. So I just need you guys to believe that I thought of it first. but my analogy here is that the Chiefs at this point, the 2021-22 Kansas City Chiefs, are a moving train. Like, they are not stopping anywhere to get new passengers on board, to let some guys off. Tyron, appreciate it. We'll drop you off here in New Orleans. We got to get Justin Reed on. What the Chiefs are doing right now is they're trying to stay at their current rate of speed, not have to dip down, but you got to get some people on and off this train. And so in particular with Trent McDuffie, like, whenever you talk about someone's mental abilities, everyone's going to think Dan Sorensen, right? Like, oh, he's just grinding the tape and he knows where he's supposed to be. Well, Trent McDuffie knows where he's supposed to be and how to be there and has the tools to get there, right? Like, he's a rookie, but he is never going to look like one, ideally, or at least he's not going to look like one very often. George Karlaftis, the only time he's going to look like a rookie is whenever he takes off his helmet and you go, oh, that's a huge child, right? Like, he's like, what, 21 or something? Like, oh man, like that. But when his helmet is on, you would go, that is Michelangelo's David. So you have it specifically with those guys, but then Sky Moore, to some extent, might buck this trend. I think he'll be able to contribute right away because of the tools that he has. He did it at a lower level of competition, but he's got the tools to be a part-time contributor immediately. Brian Cook can go hit someone tomorrow. Leo Chanel might go hit someone today for fun. Like, he might just go to a football camp somewhere and like pop a dude just trying to catch a pass over the middle, not even wearing pads. Like, those guys in particular, through the first 2 days of the draft, I think what the Chiefs really focused on is guys who can help fill immediate needs in 2022 and will be a part of the long-term foundational stuff. You could nitpick and say they shouldn't have to have had to do that. You could have said, hey, well, you should have, you know, signed Charvarius Ward, or you should have brought in an edge at some point, and so you wouldn't have had to kind of fit that mold. But ultimately, even though that process definitely spooked me over the course of the offseason, I think we're ultimately going to look back and say they solved two problems through individual picks pretty well in terms of 2022 and the future, instead of just leaving us here to talk about how the Chiefs are choosing between now and the future, right? Running back was about now. Some people are saying, well, are they going to even be like, not, you know, trying to win is obviously a gross oversimplification, but where's their focus? And I think ultimately their focus is both on the now and the long term. I think that could get you in trouble sometimes. I think the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, so it won't get them in trouble this time.
Yeah. But I find that really interesting what you're saying, because before the draft, I remember talking to Sterling and just saying, I would love for them to grab a guy like David Ajabo at some point, because he represents the kind of high ceiling talent grab that they will never have access to unless they have a losing season. However, I also said, but they cannot afford to take Ajabo unless they also take a guy like George Karlaftis, right? I mean, we were talking about, is it Boye Mafe? Is it some, I mean, we just knew they had to double up and then Ajabo has to be the second pick, because you have to secure the present first. If your window's open, you got to go for it every year, no matter what. So when you say that, I just think, oh, not only do I agree with you, but I even wonder, maybe they couldn't even afford to take Ajabo. Maybe he wasn't even on the draft board, just knowing we'd love to be the deep team that has the luxury of putting Ajabo on the roster and rolling with it. But we need Ajabo to do his a day Jabo today and a future Jabo. Like, you know, like, that just doesn't work. It also makes me wonder, like, is that Sky Moore over George Pickens?
Yeah.
Right? Is it some of these guys, you know, they could have gone with, oh, he's coming off of the injury and he looks good. But I mean, the Chiefs just went for, they're all healthy, they're all good, they're all, we'll add the Justin Ross as the cherry on top later.
Yes.
But but our guys are present and accounted for.
Yeah. And again, like, I think if you wanted to build a different reality, you could say, well, wouldn't it be cooler to be the Ravens and to believe in your own edge rush enough that you can get through a season and then you have a Ajabo? Cause like what I've said, and I'm pretty well tucked into George Karlaftis. Cause I also think I have a decent feel of what he's going to be, which I think is probably important on the expectations front. Like if you said 5 years down the line, you said, hey, George Karlaftis or David Ajabo has gone to like three Pro Bowls and has an all pro selection and they're about to get $100 million second contract, who's it going to be? So I guess it's probably more likely that that guy is David Ajabo, but definitely only George Karlaftis is going to play 85% of the Chiefs snaps in week one. You know what I mean? Like, yep. So again, I don't know that that is sort of being boiled down to have your options limited because of your own actions. But ultimately, I think the Chiefs are probably pretty happy with that.
Yeah. I want to talk more Karlaftis in just a second. I do just want to let people know we're doing a giveaway. Josh, I don't know if you're eligible or not. Now that you're a guest, you may have missed out. Anyway, just want to say, if you want to, we're doing monthly contests. We're doing monthly contest giveaways for our listeners. And this month is a Patrick Mahomes jersey. Do you have one of those, Josh?
I don't. It looked really good. I could put it on one of these walls behind me. I'm going to reorganize my office pretty soon. So
if you want to enter, I just want to let you know there are multiple ways to get entries. So check out the link in the description of however you're watching or listening to this podcast to find out how to enter. Terms and conditions apply. That's the prize version of thoughts and prayers. Terms and conditions apply. So yeah, that's out there.
Hey, are the terms and conditions that being a guest kicks you out of the prize pool? Because I feel like
it's probably like your insurance company. There's always a reason to reject your claim.
Yeah.
My great grandpa was probably Arrowhead Addict first editor, and I'm now unable to get it. Who knows? Hey, I want to talk Karlaftis because everyone just, it's almost like he's viewed as this like really great consolation prize, right? Mm. And like, I don't want to like get into the weeds and call people out, but I was even reading, like, I read one thing where like some people in like who love the Chiefs, know the Chiefs, were like, Karlaftis is a really great fit. He's like a high, quote, high fit.
Mm-hmm.
We're also saying, please don't draft him. And it's like, oh, he's rated as a top pick who's a perfect fit and we don't want him. Because we'd rather have these other, and I'm just thinking, this feels incongruent. It feels like we're underselling. The guys whose very jobs depend on it are like picking him themselves.
Yeah.
And if you watch the call, then you have Steve Spagnuolo's on the phone going, boy, I've been sitting in this war room like hoping and praying that you're going to be here on the other end of this call. So I guess I just want to ask you, I mean, you've already talked in some ways about this, but like, why is he the consolation prize for some? Is that fair or unfair? I don't know. Can you unpack that? Or do you even agree with that? Or are you not seeing that?
No, I think there's something to it. And I think that the fact that I feel like I could pretty confidently play all sides of that one is probably a decent indicator that there's something to it, but maybe that it's also gone maybe a little too far in some way, shape, or form. So here's what I think is happening there. First of all, I do absolutely, literally believe that Steve Spagnuolo was saying a prayer in the war room quietly to himself, out loud, though, not a silent prayer. Just one kind of just like, dear God, if you can hear me, George Karlaftis could just fall to 30. I do think that there's a chance that was happening. Well, and so the reason that I think you see a little bit of the splits on this, and it's kind of funny because usually the groups I'm about to invoke right now are not, they don't usually align this way, but all the nerds love him. The nerds love George Karlaftis. There's some big nerd hype for George Karlaftis. And I think the reason behind that is that he moves like a bulldozer. Like, he turns every offensive lineman in front of him into a blocking sled. He also has really good use of his hands. It's always very fun. I enjoy watching him play football and like in the truest sense. But I think on the other hand, the reason that you're going to find the dissenters on some level, or at least people who would have liked to have seen them go some other way, it's because, as he moves forward like a bulldozer, he also bends like a bulldozer, like, which is not very much. It's a pretty stiff operation. Like, he's going to go through you, or again, not to, what I don't want to make this turn into is that he's like a Neanderthal. That's absolutely not true. That might be the biggest misconception here that I really don't want to take off on Karlaftis, because what he can do, catching the hands of offensive linemen, moving them to the side. Now, all of a sudden, you're trying to block half of George Karlaftis. You're not going to block all of him very well, but you're going to block half of him not at all. So like there really is something to that. But I think what's really happening there is that the elite bendy edge rushers that all of a sudden, like, they just bend at their hip at a 90 degree angle in a way that doesn't make any sense. And then they're you know, it keeps them from being run around the back of the pocket if you're trying to push on the outside. Or also at the NFL level, it's just really hard for a defensive end to run through, let's make it Orlando Brown Jr. You know, like that. Yeah. He does not lose to power ever. Like that battle in training camp is going to be, they could sell tickets just to that, and I would pay for them. Like it'll be incredible just to watch. It'll be like a scene from Pacific Rim. But again, like if you do end up in a matchup with somebody that is playing power first, or if you're an offensive lineman at the NFL level and you know that what he's going to bring to the table is going to be power, you're preparing for that. I would say that my fear, and the reason that he landed all the way down at 30, is because I don't know that he can win in a different way just yet. Again, not by technique or by not having a plan. He's actually pretty good at that, specifically for somebody whose first sport was water polo. But I do think that he lacks the trait that you most typically see attached to a 25 sack, you know, Pro Bowl campaign, like just somebody who just goes absolutely 25 is too many, but we got a 17 game season now, you know,
maybe,
but
like that, George Karlaftis. I don't know. Maybe.
That's right. But you know, if you see a 15 to 20 sack season from one of the elite guys, it's probably going to be because he is just putting an offensive tackle in hell 16, 17 games a year. And in a variety of ways. I don't know that Karlaftis is going to get bendier, but I also think that, and again, this kind of goes back to the moving train thing. Like I have a very hard time seeing him be a weak link on this defense. Yeah. And so I think that's the logic of a pick. He also, again, he fits what Spags wants to do as long as he can do his thing in run support.
Yeah. I think part of the, I guess I wrestle with the fairness of it, because the guy's 21, right? Like,
yeah.
He could legally drink in the same month that he was drafted.
Right.
So already you're just thinking, well, his best football is ahead of him.
Yes.
The guy doesn't even start playing football until the eighth grade.
Yep.
Right. So he's still sort of, I mean, he's played for years, but he goes to Purdue his freshman year. He was like amazing. You know, like, I mean, he showed up on the national radar as a freshman because of what, like 17 tackles for loss or something in Big Ten play, and shows up in games. I'm on the phone yesterday with his defensive line coach, Coach Hagen, from Purdue yesterday. He says, hey, look, man, he said, here's the thing about Karlaftis. And he wasn't overselling Karlaftis, because I said, hey, you also worked with Ryan Kerrigan. I've seen Ryan Kerrigan comparisons. Would you say that? And he's like, no. I mean, have you seen Ryan Kerrigan? Ryan Kerrigan had like 100 sacks at the pro level. Like stop getting ahead of George Karlaftis. He's a rookie. And I was
right.
Like, oh, okay.
Yep.
And then he said, but hey, look, his whole sophomore year was like lost. Mm-hmm. He got COVID, comes back, has a knee injury, it's a wash. So there's no development. It's just nursing rehab and then trying not to get COVID for a whole sophomore year. Then last year he comes back and he said he was so determined to try to make up for a year lost and be like the national defensive hero again. Mm-hmm. And he said, and everyone had talked that he doesn't have speed. It's all strength. So he spent the whole first half of the year way up too high in his rush, trying to go as a speed rusher versus, like, he said, we had to coach him back into being what we like, being into what makes him so good.
Yeah.
So in other words, this whole last season that we're looking at this tape of, his own coach is saying, yeah, we kind of had to coach him into being himself because he was letting the press in his head and making up for COVID. And suddenly he's like not doing what he should. And he ends up with like 4 or 5 sacks on the year and like this lesser production. And then suddenly he's like pass rusher number 5 or 6 and going at the bottom of the first round. So like, I'm listening to that and just thinking, like, I'm already thinking, man, he's so young and whatever anyway. And then he's saying that, I'm like, maybe the Chiefs are going to find out that he's even better than, like, we already know he's going to be a very solid pro. That feels like the floor. But I'm also excited for maybe an untold ceiling.
Yeah.
That may surprise us all. Like, what the hell, Jared Allen? Where did this come from?
Right.
You know, and like, didn't think this guy would be averaging double digit sacks, but here we are.
Well, so that's one of the other things that I'm trying to think about the stuff that I don't want people to take away from our conversations about him. It's like, I also don't want people to go like, oh, okay, so he's just a tank that has one move. Like, okay, so this was the selling point on Breland Speaks, right? Like, he's just never on the ground and he, you know, is big. Like, that's so also, true. That's, it's so what it was, never on the ground, man. But that's also not this. Like, George Karlaftis does have all of the physical tools you would ask for, like where his athletic testing does not look like Breland Speaks's. Like, that is not a reasonable comparison to make. So yeah, I absolutely do think that we have spent more time talking about his floor than his ceiling, in part because I do think that was probably the final like selling point on him for the Chiefs, of like, we just know that he's going to be here for us again 85% of the snaps for 17 games, ideally, yeah, barring a big injury. But I also do think I'll bring up a name that I think this is what Matt Derrick invoked last night or on Monday on Almost Entirely Sports. He said, look, I mean, maybe he could be Tom Bahali with a little extra martial arts training. And that one stuck for me because his hands and his hand fighting and all of that is already really good. It's like, that's a route to get there. Again, he would be a real anomaly if he got particularly bendy at the pro level, because you're right, even for a 21-year-old though, like, that's just something that you just don't see happen at age 25 very often, as far as I can tell. But he has a billion tools, and being bendy also guarantees you nothing. Like, I think ultimately we're going to look at him as being a pretty good pick. I think that if he is the best pick out of this draft, I would be surprised just by how we review him in years to come. But if that's the case, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing either, because if there is a 10% chance that he becomes an all pro, just absolutely feasting at that spot, maybe it's more than 10%. I don't know. I do think it's on the board though. Then yeah, maybe he's just feasting because also he's playing on a defensive line where most of the attention goes to Chris Jones. So he gets one-on-one a bunch and he's going to end up going against some tackles that aren't as strong as him or aren't as quick as him or don't have as good a technique as him. And then yeah, maybe in 3 years we're going, wow, did you guys see George Karlaftis having 10 sacks a year by this point? Because I wasn't sure that was going to happen. And look at us now.
Yeah. Let me put you on the spot. Career sack total, George Karlaftis, when he retires in 2033.
When he retires?
Yeah. Just give me a number.
I haven't given this one fart's worth of thought. I haven't thought about this in the shower. I haven't thought about this on any level. I'll say, you know what? Let me hold on. Give me one checkup here. I want to check one other person before I give you the answer. Do you have an answer? Your answer will not change mine.
I mean, I'd probably throw out 65. That sounds like a good safe. Like, oh wow, that's a lot of sacks. And also, well, over the course of like 8 seasons, that's moderate totals each year, reliable through his 20s. I could go for that.
I also like that, but Frank Clark has 53.5. And if the bet right now is that he's going to be more productive than Frank Clark has been on two teams on his second contract, that's a lot. I'll go 55 in honor of Frank Clark and also D Ford.
Well, I mean, you're talking about two guys.
I think he's going to play for a long time. That might be my biggest guess. That he probably plays a long time, and he probably, not to make him a compiler, but I think he probably plays for a long time and probably plays at a pretty high level and probably doesn't miss a lot of time. So yeah,
you're describing Alan Bailey is who you're describing.
Somebody compared him to Alex Okafor on Twitter, and I thought that was sort of unfair, but also I kind of went like, well, yeah. I mean, if you made Alex Okafor like faster, stronger, younger, and on a rookie contract, like I don't know that sucks. What did Alan Bailey end up with? This is where Almost Entirely Sports ends up a lot of the times. Is like Rudy will ask me a question, and then I'll just start going through Pro Football Reference and asking questions out loud. 22 sacks for Alan Bailey. Getting sacks is hard.
It is hard. It is hard. I said 65, and apparently he's going to be in the Ring of Honor. Honestly, I mean, Kimball Landers is now in the Ring of Honor. George Karlaftis, he'll be in the Ring of Honor if this is the go. I mean, nothing personal on Kimball Landers, but yeah. Anyway,
I think 65 sacks would probably get him there if they're all with the Chiefs. I'm going to see where that puts him on the Chiefs all-time sack leaders list now, because you've really piqued my curiosity on this.
All right. Hey, while you're looking that up, I just want to let people know about something else. If you like the Airhead Addict podcast, please consider becoming a member of the family. Members get access to our private Discord where we all hang out. Vertoram, myself, Patrick, Sterling, other AA contributors, etc. We have happy hour kind of hangouts. We've got special giveaways that we're going to be starting. All kinds of things going on. Check out the link in the description of wherever you get this podcast for more information there. We appreciate your support. Josh, do you have the rundown of where George Karlaftis, how many sacks does he need to be in the top 10 all time for the Chiefs?
Top 10 all time for the Chiefs. Number 10 right now is Chris Jones at 49 and a half. 50, okay. 50 would get him there. I like to think that Chris Jones will add to that.
Yeah. Harder than I thought. I said 65 like it's making pancakes in the morning.
65 would be only behind Derek Tomba. I skipped my list. Derek Thomas, Tomba Holly, Neil Smith, Justin Houston, Art Still, Buck Buchanan, and Jerry Mays ended with 65 and a half. So that'd put him at 8 right there. 65 is a lot of sacks.
What about Eric? Where's Eric Hicks on that list?
He's 11 at 44 and a half.
Okay. Well, I was kind of thinking that range, Eric Hicks range, but apparently I'm way off in my sack.
Did I say 55? I'd need to rethink some things.
We're both drunk on sack totals.
This show's very sacks positive.
We're both taking the under. We're both Lisa Simpson right now playing the sacks.
Jared Allen had 43, which you go, man, that's 12th all time. In 3 years.
Yeah, dude.
That he guy only was played freak. Here from 04 through 07.
I loved him. I loved him while he was here.
Good.
Yeah, let me ask you this.
Yes.
You know, we got Lonnie Johnson trade, Justin Ross addition, Melvin Ingram, at least some level of something.
Tag we've never heard of before that Brad Beach talked about today.
Just like, by the way, here's the creepy thing about this tag, right? NFL reporter Field Yates, good guy. Field Yates comes out with, by the way, the Baltimore Ravens and the Chiefs have used the UFA tender on Melvin Ingram and Justin Houston, respectively, and that allows them to blah, 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 right? It gives the teams a compensatory pick before July 22nd if they sign with another team. And if it gets to July 22nd, then they can only sign with it. And everyone was going, what the hell is this designation? And why doesn't every team use it ever on every free agent that they want to whatever?
Yeah.
But then, so then I start looking. I'm like, where's this been used? The last time it was used, 2020, the New York Giants used it on Marcus Golden, pass rusher. The only person who reported on it then, Field Yates.
Wow.
The previous use before that, 2017, running back LeGarrette Blount, New England Patriots. The only person who reports it on then, Field Yates. I got to wonder, did Field Yates make up his own NFL designation, pulls it out so randomly every 2 years, we all fall for it and report on it like it's a real thing. Meanwhile, the Players Association is going, you can't tag a free agent. Get the hell out of here. Yeah. What is going on there? I've looked for bylaws. I've looked in NFLPA glossary looking, like, where is, quote, UFA tender? The only time I see it is on Field Yates' timeline on Twitter and his reporting on ESPN. What do you make of that?
So first things I thought what you were going to get to is because you and I both in our respective arrowhead spaces, you see news sometimes and you know that your sandwich is going to sit out there on that kitchen table for another 10 minutes. You got to get in here and write, you know, it's just something that not a lot of people know. But I saw that and I just saw Chiefs tag Justin Houston so quick that was where my first heart palpitation went. Was like, no way. No, everyone said this wasn't going to happen. Like, so that's where I started. Basically, here's the gist of it that I, to my understanding, this is the tag for veterans who don't want to show up for training camp. And you say, look, if you sign somewhere before training camp in this range, you can go. I think in that range, your team would then get the compensatory pick formula contribution. But again, like if that's the case, I don't know why teams wouldn't use it more often on free agents. They know they're going to lose. I think there must be a start time. That part escapes me. But basically, it's, hey, you either have to sign before training camp or you're coming with us. And if you're Melvin Ingram or Justin Houston right now, or LeGarrette Blount several years back or whatever. And you're thinking, hey, man, like Melvin Ingram doesn't need training camp, but Andy Reid thinks that everybody needs Chiefs training camp, right? So they said, look, we'd love to have you back. If you're Melvin Ingram, you're definitely not bleeping around with OTAs and mini camps and all that stuff. But what the Chiefs said is, hey, we'll have you back. I think it would cost them like $4.4 million. We'd pay you a nice little yearly wage, but you're going to have to get to St. Joe. You can't just meet us at Arrowhead. You're going to have to make your way to St. Joe at some point. Otherwise, if you go somewhere else, you're going to have to go to their camp anyway. So I think that's basically the logic. It's a quote unquote franchise tag for old guys who don't want to go to training camp, I guess.
But it feels like the kind of thing that maybe isn't used because agents and players loathe it.
They would have to.
Yeah. And so you're like, well, I don't want to piss off the agent of 15 other guys that may want to sign here. So I'm not going to, but it's so weird in a league like this that we haven't heard of it outside of, anyway, Field Yates has used it 5 times in 5 years, and that's the only guy who uses it. That's all I know. But here was my original question. We're talking, so the Chiefs have added some guys after the draft, could have some guys, whatever. We're getting a much better idea of what positions can look like. Mm-hmm. What is the one position that has you the most worried outside of edge? Because I feel like even now with Karlaftis, with Frank, whatever, because Melvin's not signed, even if Melvin is signed, honestly, that probably still is the issue. So let me just take edge off the table because that's the easy answer. Is there a position group that still bothers you, frightens you to some extent?
Yeah, I think that the best answer is still corner, not for the same reason that it's edge though, right? At edge, you go, are there enough guys here? Like, I was really surprised they didn't spend the second day two pick on an edge, honestly. I expected one of those to go pass rusher. So it's different, obviously, because half of their draft was just defensive backs. But I could even rope in the whole defensive backfield on some level, just because you're going to rely on quite a few younger guys to do that. But ultimately, I do think that McDuffie and Snead and Fenton as your 1-2-3, and then, you know, Williams and Baker and maybe and Lonnie Johnson, you know, there are guys that you would have at that next level that I do think that by the time the season comes around, they're going to have their best options there. And I do think they'll get 3 or 4 good options from this entire group. It's probably them. It might be wide receiver. Also for kind of a different reason though, because I like the Sky Moore pick. I think eventually he's going to be a really nice player here. I don't know if he's going to be a top 10 receiver in the league. He might be, he might not be. Like, I genuinely would hate to have to guess on that. But what I do look at is the fact that he's a rookie coming into the season, and rookies have a really hard time contributing early in an Andy Reid offense. But the other element of it is that it's different, but Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster are also in their first year of an Andy Reid offense. They've been at NFL level competition. They've been in NFL offenses, and Juju especially has like done lots of stuff at lots of different levels. I think they'll be fine, but I could see them coming out week one looking a little bit discombobulated, perhaps. Maybe not week one, because week one, it seems like Andy Reid's always got like just the first 60 minutes of football scripted out perfectly. But yeah. I could see there being a time where you go, oh, you know what? I don't know. So this offense is going to it's going to stall maybe just a little bit. That wouldn't surprise me. But by extension also, I don't think it can be that bad because the real number one wide receiver is Travis Kelce. So like it can only get so dark at the overall pass catching position.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this and we'll close our episode with this. The 2022 Mac Lee Hill Award winner will be, since we're coming off the draft.
Oh man, they get these awards wrong all the time internally. I disagree with them all the time.
You do?
I do. I feel like the MVPs and the Mac Lee Hills are usually influenced by a variety of factors, is what I guess I would say. So who's the Chiefs this year?
Yeah.
I think I'm guessing that at the end of the year, I will tell you it's Trent McDuffie. I think the Chiefs at the end of the year will tell you it's George Karlaftis. How about that?
Ooh, that's a way to give me 2 answers at once. That's good.
And neither one of them were the wide receiver. So if they had at least maybe some points, I don't know.
By the way, were you insinuating that Tyrann Mathieu was given the team MVP award insincerely?
Matt, my connection's break. I can't. Our connection's bad. I gotta go. No, not insincerely.
I don't want you to get stalked on Twitter. I don't want you to get thrown under the bus.
Not insincerely. I just think it was objectively the wrong choice. not insincere, just wrong. People are wrong and people are wrong and sincere all the time.
Well, that's true. People are also wrong and insincere all the time.
Please don't clip this and tweet this portion of the show out. You know, that's how the whole Troy Aikman thing started like 3 years ago, and I've never fully lived that down. Tyrann Mathieu, I hope he has a wonderful time in New Orleans with his best friend Dan Sorensen. I hope that they play on a good defense and are very happy together.
Yeah, who would have thought that we'll give a couple defensive backs to the Saints and we'll take two from the Texans? That's the trade we want.
Yeah, what a trade. What a trade.
Man. Well, Josh Briscoe, it's always good to converse. And man, it's so great to have you on the show. Folks, if you somehow are not following Josh Briscoe on Twitter, it's a must follow at JB Briscoe. Also listen to him on 810. Do you have like set times for is it every day?
Great question. I only sometimes get to know, but because sometimes it evolves. So I'll give you the full, right. I'm just going to give you the full pitch. I'm going to plug all my stuff all together because I'm the only one that could possibly remember where they all are.
Where can people find more of Josh Briscoe if they want it, which they should?
Which you clearly should. You can listen to the Almost Entirely Sports radio show on Sports Radio 810 WHB, or you can search for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts. It's currently Almost Entirely Chiefs, but you know, you can get the rest of it by the title. Weeknights on 810. If there's a big NBA game, you know, I hope this is coming out Thursday, we'll be fine. Whenever the Suns sweep the Dallas Mavericks, there might be four times, you know, as we end a little early so we can bring you that absolute tail kicking from my beloved Phoenix Suns. So, you know, it gets shuffled around that way, but Almost Entirely Sports on 810. I host the Chiefs postgame show on 810. You can listen to Times Ours. That's the podcast on The Athletic with my friends Seth Kaiser and Nate Taylor. You can read arrowheadreport.com. That's a part of the Sports Illustrated Fan Nation Network. So we got all sorts of coverage there for you as well. And I think I didn't leave anything out. I don't know. Again, like you, I know, and just you can follow me at any social platform at JB Briscoe. There's no E at the end, though. That's the only thing in this world that I'm sensitive about.
Dude, look, I'm a Connor. Oh, yeah. Is that Connor?
No. Oh,
is there an S on the end? Did I pronounce an S? Get off my planet. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Josh, it's always good, man. Appreciate it. I'm glad to return the favor. You've had me on the show. I'm glad to have you on this show. Thanks again.
This is dangerous, but I love being guests on things. It's fun to be on the other side of the interaction sometimes. So anytime you need me, just say that you'd rather talk to anyone other than Sterling and I'll understand.
Ooh, that's our code. Love it. Thanks so much for listening, folks. And we'll see you next Tuesday. Go Chiefs. Wait, they're not playing. You can't go Chiefs. There's nothing going on. Chiefs, don't go
Justin Ross. Go Melvin Ingram.
There it is. See you guys.
Go Brett Veach.